Welcome to the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Dubay. For context, this podcast is inspired by the book Entrepreneurial Leap by Gino Wickman. Gino is the founder of EOS Worldwide and an author with over 2 million copies of his books sold worldwide. Now, in his next phase, he is taking his passion for helping entrepreneurs by partnering with five equally passionate, successful entrepreneurs, myself included, who have created the eLeap Academy, where we teach the content from the book in a one-year program guaranteed to increase the success of early stage businesses. Now, a quick note about me. I've been an entrepreneur since the age of 14 when I started my first business selling blow pop lollipops out of my locker with my best friend. I ran a company that I sold to a public company and later bought back. I'm an author, speaker, host of an annual leadership retreat, and I'm partners in several other businesses. I'll be your host for the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast, where every other week, you will be hearing life stories from successful entrepreneurs who took the leap into entrepreneurship. You will learn from their mistakes and successes and be inspired as you move forward on your journey. Now, before I introduce my guest, I'm going to share with you a bit about eLeap Academy. The Entrepreneurial Leap Academy provides an immersive 9-month experience for new entrepreneurs with a focus on the three C's: clarity, confidence, and community. Let's start with the first C, clarity. You will learn to be clear about who you are, what you want from your business, and how to get it. The next C, confidence. You will learn to be confident you are on the right path, equipped with powerful mindset tools. The last C, connected. You will become connected to a community of entrepreneurs just like you. Now, all participants receive 4 full-day in-person classes led by experienced entrepreneurs to equip you with the tools and strategies necessary to build a successful business. The Academy's dynamic community connects participants with a tribe of like-minded individuals for support and networking opportunities during and between classes. Students also receive a seasoned mentor offering personalized guidance and expertise to help you navigate the challenges of entrepreneurship. To start building the business of your dreams, visit our website at e-leap.com. Again, that's e-leap.com. There, you can learn more about and sign up for the next Entrepreneurial Leap Academy. Today's guest is Corey Gregory. Corey is a serial fitness entrepreneur, leader in the nutrition industry, and a top training expert. As a way to save money for college, Corey worked as an underground coal miner until he opened his first gym at the age of 20. He quickly earned the reputation as an industry expert in both personal training and nutrition. He co-founded one of the fastest growing sport nutrition brands ever called Muscle Farm, which sold over $500 million worth of product in the 7 years he was with the company. Corey has developed an online programming and nutrition app called Corey G Fitness, which has thousands of members that stretch across 100 countries. Max Effort Muscle, his second sports nutrition brand, is gaining steam fast in the direct-to-customer market since its inception in 2016. The brand is a refreshing change to the industry, with unique marketing and practical application, all while helping their customers get great results. Corey also founded the Old School Gym, an invite-only training facility located in Granville, Ohio. The facility is home of the 4 AM Crew, an elite drug-free powerlifting team that competes multiple times yearly. Corey personally has competed in more than 30 drug-free powerlifting competitions, He recently squatted, get this, 694 and a half pounds for a drug-free multiple world record for someone in the 181 pound division in the ages of 40 to 44. He also has multiple elite totals in the 181 and 198 pound weight classes. He's competed at 165 pounds in bodybuilding and all the way up to 242 pounds in powerlifting. He's competed in over 15 drug-free bodybuilding events, winning his NMA Pro card in 2019, and he's graced the cover of 13 fitness magazines. He has his exercise specialist certificate from Columbus State. He's a certified Nesta nutrition coach, certified by Westside Barbell, and holds a CrossFit Level 1 trainer certificate. On top of all of these accolades, he has learned and been mentored from some of the biggest names in training and nutrition, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill Phillips, Louis Simmons, Dr. Eric Serrano, Dr. Maru DiPasquale, and John Braz. Corey was also named top 50 fitness experts in the U.S. in 2019 by Men's Health. He's also an author. You can check out his latest book, How to Build Confidence and Win at Life, which is available on Kindle, paperback, and audio format through iTunes and Audible. Holy smokes, are you going to hear a lot of nuggets from Corey during our chat today? So I know you are going to enjoy. So here we go. Corey, welcome to the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast. I'm so excited to be talking to you today. I'm psyched.
Hey, well, I appreciate you having me on. I'm hoping to offer some value and turn some light bulbs on.
I know you will. And we were chatting a minute ago. I love your setup there. You know, I have a lot of interviews that I do, and this one's the most chill I've seen. It's the most chill.
We created it with a vision in mind for things like this and just on a regular basis to be able to sit down, pop it on and rock.
Yeah. And you have your own podcast, which is just one of the many things that you're up to. Now, I like to start with a quote oftentimes at the beginning of these interviews. So I'm going to share the quote, and then anything that comes to your mind, I'd love to hear it. So it goes like this. When I was 19 or 20 years old in community college starting my business, people didn't really understand what I was doing pursuing entrepreneurship. Now it's looked upon as the main pursuit. I don't think I could try to be an entrepreneur. I just think I am one. Do you know who said that?
Yeah, I tweeted it 2 days ago.
Yeah. I'm glad you remembered.
Oh, man, that's so true, too, because kind of like I alluded to when we were talking off air, like I just think there's some things that were unavoidable about me. And that I just had to give a chance. You know, I can't conform. I just have my own ideas. I've had a belief in myself for a really long time. I've had a very, very deep why and passion for change. And, you know, it's like everybody goes in ruts from time to time, but I just think the fire, once I lit it, it just never really went out, man. And I think that a lot of people think it's cool. I always remember when I first started, people thought I was like a community college loser that was like, you know, half crazy. And I was just like, I just could tell people didn't really understand what I was trying to do. And I had never met a person that did the job that I wanted to do. Cause in 1999 in coal country, like no one's a personal trainer. People are just trying to survive, man. Like, the coal miners used to say like, oh, you want to be like Richard Simmons. Like they had no one to even like reference when I was trying. It was amazing. Literally amazing. So, and the internet's not really a thing at that point, like where I could be searching and looking. So it just was it felt very lonely early on. And then now it's like your entrepreneurship's like you're a pro athlete, bro. And right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I would just say it just didn't feel like that when I started at not even close.
What inspired you to tweet that?
I think what inspired me to tweet that was that I just know that this life isn't for everybody. And I think that what is fallen on a lot of what's happening, like media wise, is that is something where you're just at Starbucks and you're popping out a million and these ideas and all of those things are great. But like the work ethic, like I'm different, dude. Like this is like a different kind of life. Like there is the glitz and glamour from time to time, but those are very few and far between of like the 320 alarm clocks for the last 15 years, the ups and downs and craziness. I think that you ran into when you were doing some research for me and like, you know, like what Arnold said to me, like, it's all about, you know, how you respond when you come off of those really trying times. And I just have always believed in myself. And so I know I'm going to get knocked down, but I'm always going to stand back up. And I just think not a lot of people are talking about what it really takes. So there's like a fake version of what's kind of out here, I think. But, you know, I've really lived this for my entire adult life and I know what it takes. And not everybody is willing to sign up for that.
True.
So that's what made me tweet it. Like, I knew there was components of me that had this, but I had to mature it, self-educate, push myself and take calculated risk and ultimately believe that everything's possible. And so, yeah, I don't know, man. It's, I just think that that's lost a lot out here. So I started tweeting instead of putting things on my notes section. So that would be something I would have put in my notes section and then created content around. Instead, I started using Twitter more as my notes section. And so that's where it came from.
Okay, got it. So going back to your early days growing up, did you notice you had this entrepreneurial gene? Maybe you didn't even know what that meant. And did you do anything? Did you have businesses growing up?
My first was trading cards.
Trading
cards. Oh, yeah, yeah. Which happened for a lot of people, I think. You know, I made a trade one time with a kid on a bunch of newer cards for a bunch of his dad's older cards. And Joe Montana rookie, Terry Bradshaw rookie, like Roger Staubach rookie. I mean, the trade was so epic. The kid's dad realized it 2 months later and came to my house and basically forced me and my mom, which I lived in a trailer. Probably the card collection I accumulated was probably worth more than my trailer back in 1994. And I told him, I made a deal with this guy. I said, look, this deal was legit. But if you are forcing me as a grown man, essentially, to give some of this back, I'm keeping the Joe Montana rookie, the OJ Simpson rookie, previous to the Broncos situation, obviously. Yeah. And there's like five cards I kept, and I sold one at a yard sale for $200. I still have the other four, actually.
No way. Are you kidding me?
So, but what that did for me, though, was I had traded like a newer Bo Jackson or something, which was like not worth anything, and for a Roger Staubach rookie. I went to my grandma's yard sale. I sold it for $200. I was set up for 15 minutes. She didn't make $200 the whole weekend where she was selling all these things. Oh my goodness. I think it just kind of showed me something. And my dad had tried multiple businesses when the coal mine was on strike and they just never really went well. My grandfather was a construction guy and used to be a coal miner and then was a construction guy and did well, but then had some struggles towards the end. So like I saw it a little bit, but there were some people in my town that owned a like small grocery store. And there were some examples of people I saw that their life was definitely different. They operated different. They didn't operate like my family did. They weren't living check to check. There wasn't that financial struggle that was apparent. And so I knew there was another way, but there wasn't like, it wasn't real defined.
Yeah. You grew up in a coal mining area, as you just mentioned. And did you work in a coal mine? For a summer or something like that?
Yeah. So I did a total of 6 months. It was like I did a summer for 4 months, then came back, ran out of money, came back, worked another 2 months. So I worked 600 feet underground. I mean, my best paycheck for a week was 93 hours. So, I mean, my staple was 70 to 85 a week for all of those months that I worked. So I just literally worked, there's no direct deposit. Like, so I have this great story where at one point I had like seven or eight paychecks stacked up on my desk because I was not out of the coal mine when the bank was actually open because I was working.
That's insane.
I was working from 5 a.m.
You couldn't even deposit the checks.
That's how focused I was.
Wow. How did that sort of prepare you for entrepreneurship? Have you ever reflected on that in any way?
Yeah. So here's one thing that I made an association with, like, real early as a minor. First off, I was pretty good at it because I'm a fourth generation. So my dad, my grandfather, my great grandfather, who's tattooed on my arm, passed away in a coal mine explosion. All my uncles, like literally my entire family, are miners. They all have such great work ethic, but then they all, you know, had struggles towards the end or had health problems or whatnot. And it's like, if I could take that work ethic that I learned and apply it to something I love, I should be, in theory, unstoppable, right? And so as I worked in, I think that was a major win for me, is like, no one was going to help me or save me. I needed to save my own money, make my own money to move away to get this opportunity. I just needed a job. And then when they said, Corey, you can work as many hours physically as you can handle, we need that much help.
Wow.
I was at overtime within 3 days. And so I'm getting 50 hours of overtime. I'm doing the math. I'm thinking I could save $20,000 and for real get out of here in a few months. And that's what I was able to do. And so when I came to Columbus to kind of start this fitness thing, I was like, how could anybody beat me if this is what I know I'm willing to do? Like, no one's in the city. There is no coal miners rolling around. Like, this shit is like completely different. And I knew that, like, if I could just carry that forward, and I have this kind of thing like pack a lunch, like, if I knew I could keep packing my lunch at that level, I just don't know how anybody could really, because I'm not really like a super gifted athlete really at anything, whether it's fitness or strength or the look, or I never took drugs. So I was always kind of trying to play catch up to the dudes on steroids. And so, you know, but my work ethic is insane and my consistency is really, really strong. And I knew those two things would carry me forward and probably beat most people.
You know, we talk about some of the must-dos as an entrepreneur, and one of them is work hard, really hard. And so you obviously had this sort of ingrained into you. Where did that come from for you, that drive?
What I talked about being like that 14, 15 years old, I think I was finally just like fed up. That's like the best thing I could say, like, about this whole process, is one day I was just like, there has to be a better way.
You were thinking that way at that age.
Yeah, I was, because I think I saw so much struggle. Like, my dad had went on strike multiple times. My mom and him split up when I was 11. She's waiting tables and working side jobs and cleaning houses and barely being able to make the rent. It's $150 a month. I'm working on the farm at $4 an hour to save money so I can have shoes. Like, I'm watching all this stuff happen, and it was just like, and then I see some other families that, by no means were they wealthy, I don't think, at that point, but they just operated different. They had the new stuff. They had some of the luxuries. The parents operated different. They didn't miss practices or games because they had to work. Like, you know, and it was like, I was like, I want that. I don't know what that is, but I want that. And I just thought to myself, here's the other thing is, I just made up my mind that this was not for me. I'm like, I'm meant, and I would start to say things like, I'm meant to do big things. Like, what's that even mean when you're 15 in a trailer and you got to do it? Like, but I was just like, I just knew something out here was different, or I just told myself, I don't know which, the chicken or the egg, right? Mm-hmm. But I just felt like my style and confidence, my ability, that this was not the life meant for me. And I was going to go try to some way. I saw my mom's W-2 for the year, I remember. And I was just like, I need to be making this like a month. Like, what are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? Like, I started to get mad at the process that she was surviving. So I don't blame her. I always tell her when I tell stories, don't take offense to it, because if I'm not that, I'm not this. But the reality was, I was like, I'm just not going to survive out here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it on, and I'm going to make this thing different forever. And it is truly is from that.
Were there any sources of inspiration beyond what you were seeing, say, from people in the, you know, close by who, you know, seemed to, maybe they weren't wealthy, but they had new stuff, as you mentioned, but were there things you were reading or watching?
Yeah, 100%. So a couple things, the Dorseys, which, it was amazing. This guy's a coal miner, during one of the strikes, he saved all his money and started a first like Quick Mart, little grocery store gas station. And I watched him grow that because we actually lived in one of his rentals and couldn't make the rent one time and got kicked out. But I wasn't mad at him for that. But I was young and I remember that. And I remember this guy owns this house. He owns this little grocery store. But then he helped every one of his family members open up stores. And so they all got out of it. And so I watched that as a kid. There's another guy that started a lumber company that the entire town next to me worked in. And I remember hearing numbers like he was doing 20 million, 30 million. And he was like a dude who started with a saw with his brother cutting posts for the coal mine. And so like I saw that he was always driving Range Rovers and Hummers and stuff. And he was like in his 60s. So I didn't really know him, but I just knew him and like some of his family. So I had a couple examples. And then my grandfather, really taught me, I think, just how to be a man. Like he was just like my first idol. He was the one that taught me how to lift weights. He was telling me these golden rules of like keeping your word and like stuff like that. So, and then I have my mom who was just working like unbelievably hard to just survive. So I had all of this going on. And then I started reading about Arnold that's why it was unbelievable for me to be able to learn from him personally, because I read The Education of the Bodybuilder, which was really kind of like a motivational book. I read all these like muscle magazines and I'm just seeing like he's talking about applying the work ethic in the gym into life. And I just picked up on that like really early. And I also picked up on that I was feeling more confident. It was something that was in these weights. It was angry young guy with something positive and then added to confidence. And I just started dedicating myself. My sophomore year of high school, I made like this pact with myself that I would just not miss workouts. Like I'm not the guy that doesn't show up, that has an excuse. And I don't even know where really that came from, but I haven't missed more than a week since I was 15.
Jeez.
I'm 45. Yeah. I mean, and that's just like that right there. So if I go on vacation, I don't skip workouts. I might train a few days less or do something different, but I just don't miss. Like I just don't.
And you've mentioned Arnold a couple of times and you're talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Correct.
So just in case the listeners don't know, and I'm curious, I have to imagine you've watched this sort of biography series on him. I can't remember if it was on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Oh, it spoke. You know what I was happy about is all of those things that you watched is all the reason why he's impacted so many people and how he's reinvented himself. And yeah, from afar, he taught me so much. In person, he taught me so much. By watching him operate, he taught me so much. His youth and vibrance, like up to this age, is unbelievable. He loves living life. Like he loves making impact. And his vision, and I've told him multiple times, but like, if I don't see him operate, every time I would be around Arnold, I would come back and go, why am I capping myself? This guy has zero ceiling. Like people say that, like this guy really is that. Like it's at a unbelievable level because of how many times he's had these verticals and reinvented himself and went ultimately to the top. And so I would always come home from dealing with him and just say, like, I'm thinking too small. He loved the coal miner stuff. I mean, he loved just kind of where I came from. We locked on. I only studied the 70s bodybuilding because I didn't have no internet. It was all muscle magazines. And that's like my early education in fitness. So it's almost like I lived then, honestly. And so when I was writing programs and stuff with Arnold, we just saw, it's funny to say this, we saw a lot of the training the same way. Mm-hmm. So you got to remember he's a bodybuilder first. And so that I remind him, I think my enthusiasm of that time frame, that style of training, I think reminded him a lot of some of the best times of his life. And so, we were able to really do a lot of cool things together.
How important has mentorship been with him or any of the others that have been mentors to you? And you mentioned a few that I read about in your biography. Just how important are mentors in the entrepreneurship journey?
They're huge. And I think that obviously, first off, their mentors, and they don't even know they are, because you're reading, you're consuming all their content. One of the most impactful people on me is Andrew Carnegie. I mean, it's funny because I've even had people ask me, like, coal miner fitness guy reading Andrew Carnegie, which obviously Napoleon Hill, Andrew Carnegie, everyone that follows that. But like, there's a book called How to Raise Your Own Salary that is not as popular as Think and Grow Rich and some of these other ones. And it changed. It's like the way I operate, like clearly over delivering and all these different organized thinking, all these like these topics that they touched on. And also I grew up not very far from Pittsburgh. So I'm from Ohio, but it's the Ohio Valley. So it's like a lot of things have Carnegie's name on it back there. So right. I grew up seeing his name, but I didn't know who he was. And then when I ran into some of the content, I was like, ooh, okay, that's why there's four colleges named after this dude. You know, he like changed the world, him and Rockefeller. And so I really started studying the old principles and just locked on. So Carnegie and Napoleon Hill stuff, huge. Arnold, massive. And it's like I started kind of like using them as like back and forth between their principles and the way they operate. And that was massive for me. And then I just would always go out of my way to be around people that I thought were great, whether it's work for free, add value in some way. I've been able to be around, I mean, some real goats, man, over the years. And, you know, I was around Tiger Woods for a little while. Obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger, Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell, you know, Bill Phillips, who was a big, OG in the supplement industry, EAS, the Body for Life. I was around him for a while. And I would just like really watch how they operate, ask very pertinent quality questions, and try to learn. And so I'm a mix of a lot of really, really great people I've been around, man. Super blessed.
For those that you say you've been around, can you explain to somebody who's early on in their journey how you worked the relationship with those people? In other words, did you have a monthly call with them? Did you even have their number? Would you see them at conferences and just bend their ear in the hallway? Like, what did it look like for you?
So I think that this is a miss for a lot of people nowadays, because there's, you have to build up some equity with the person to even get the ask, unless you're just straight paying for it. And all those people I just referenced, you ain't paying for their time.
No.
You ain't got no money. Arnold ain't got a price, bro. So, you know, it started off like, if I can lead you through Arnold's process, I think that would be helpful for people.
Yeah.
He's one of the obviously biggest ones in our, in my industry. Is like, it started off as I had obviously read Arnold's stuff for years and years. And I saw that I had found the person who was running his website. This is way before the supplement business and all the stuff was going on. And I thought I could offer value as a writer to Schwarzenegger.com. So I wrote an article, I send it in, I bothered the crap out of this guy that was running it, who's still his main guy, by the way, which is funny. He loves me. I might throw 10 things to him and he might hit me back on one, but that's all that matters. But he's the one that runs his newsletter that goes out to 600,000 people. And I've been writing for that recently too, which has been cool. Anyway, so I write an article, I'll never forget it. It was called Golden Era Intensity, because I thought that that was lost in today's training. So I know it's something that's near and dear to Arnold. It's obvious that I understand it. I wrote it in a way I think that was, you know, easy to understand. It was like one page hitter. And I didn't know he read everything that went on his website, but now knowing him, I should have known that now being around him. But so he reads it, Ketchel reads it, and they use it. So here I am, you know, I'm at the Arnold Fitness Expo, and now it's like I'm selling programs out front. I'm trying to put in article. Like I'm just like, I'm around it anywhere I can be. You know what I mean? And with the hopes of trying to create value, create a relationship. And it took years and years. The company I had started and co-founded was doing really well. I went and I was already, to give you a reference, I was already a presenter at the Arnold Sports Classic at a level where I'm spending $50,000, $70,000, like for an event just to be there to like have my booth and all that. I still went to Barnes and Noble's to stand in line for 3 hours to get my book signed by Arnold. And my business was doing 70 million top line. And I just needed 1 second of his time. That I was just looking, and I was already at that level of business. So you would think like no one, most people would not do that.
Yeah.
He was late. He flew in. It's Barnes and Noble's in Columbus. I'm stood there. It was for the Total Recall book. I get all the way to the front of the line and he's not even really looking up. He's signing. He's trying to catch up. And I said, Arnold, I'm a presenter at the Arnold Classic. My business will do 70 million in sales this year. Yep. Stops him in his tracks and he looks up. My guy behind me takes a picture. It's actually in one of the books. I have the picture of that exact moment. And he looked at me, he goes, that's really good. And then he kind of took a mental snapshot. I know he did. And then it was like 2 or 3 months later. I think that's actually when I put the article in. I'm sorry. So I backtracked. So that's when I put the article and then he used it. So now it's like, I meet him.
I don't know whether he knows touch point.
So multiple touch points. And then we get a phone call one day from Tom Arnold's friend, the actor, that he was in True Lies with and says, hey, your company's doing really good. You guys want me to hook you up with Arnold. He's looking for somebody to work with, blah, blah, blah. And we got a chance to pitch him. And so then what is ironic about that story is I had been working really hard to get this magazine cover when that was a thing. And I had just been currently the month that pitch happens. I couldn't make this up if I tried, Rob. I'm on newsstands everywhere with what I would call one of my greatest achievements in my careers. I'm on the cover of a huge fitness magazine with all three of my kids. And it was during whatever Father's Day is, July, I think it was.
Yeah, it's a great picture.
Yeah, so unbelievable great moment. They took 10 pictures at the end of the shoot. It was 8 hours, and that ended up being the cover. That wasn't even planned. It's completely unplanned. They just stopped by to see me at the end. It was unbelievable. And I almost cried when they called and told me that's what they're going to use. I didn't even think that was even a possibility. Anyway, so I'm in the meeting, and all of a sudden, I don't even think to bring this thing to the meeting, which is totally unaware. Another investor has bought it at the airport and throws it to Arnold during the meeting. And so now it's like, he opens it up and it's all at my gym, which looks like a 1970s gym. So he sees I'm in condition. I live the life. I understand multiple touch points, you know, and I've been working on this, you know, from selling programs at 20 years old at the Arnold Classic, which happened to be in Columbus, Ohio. Luckily, when I moved here, I didn't know that. It's totally, totally luck. All this other stuff building up to then the point where I get the pitch. Then I have the credibility, the pitch goes good, and then I get to start working with my idol. And so then from that point on, there was just like, everything was just like, I mean, unbelievable, because I got to see really behind the doors of what's happening with a guy that level. And then deliver on it still to this day. You know, I go to Christmas at his house and I get a chance to still work with him. I see him a few times a year. And if I really need something, it's, you know, I can get to him. So it's cool.
So let me backtrack for a second, because I want to talk about what your first business was, where like legit business, not that the card trading wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Personal trading. Yeah. What was the first business? And then I'd love to hear the story of how you got into what I believe is the nutritional business or the supplement business, Muscle Farm. I think is what it was called. Yeah. Sure. And also if you could just touch on, I think you had a partner in that business, and just your thoughts on partnership.
Yeah. I got some thoughts on that.
Okay. So first business, then Muscle Farm and partnership, and we'll go from there.
So the first business was, I always talk about this with younger entrepreneurs. What's your entry point? Like, you have to have an entry point to see if it's even for you. So for me, I used to have this thought, like, if I could lift weights and get paid, that would be my dream, right? So what's that really look like? What's that even mean? And so personal training was the first thing that I could say, like, okay, I can teach people how to lift weights for an hour and charge them. I was charging $20 back then, which is crazy. But to me, I was making $21 an hour overtime as a coal miner.
Yeah.
If I'm making 20 bucks to teach Irene how to do bicep curls.
That's amazing.
I'm winning, dude.
That's right. So
I think this is the other thing that people lose track of in my story that I like to really talk about early, is that I was a success the day Irene paid me $20, because I was proving that it was possible. So everything after that is gravy, because I came from a situation to a job that I'd never met anyone that had ever had that before. And a lot of people I grew up around lift weights, including my family, but no one did it as their job. It's unheard of. And so when that actually started working, and I'm 19, 20 years old, you know, I build up 8-10 clients and I'm like, this is like real. I can pay my bills doing this and I can start my LLC. I started my LLC in 1999. And where things really, I think, happened for me and changed some things. I was halfway through renting space like a barber, paying $250 a month, training my clients at the small gym. And all of a sudden they try to switch me to a percentage model. And I was 20 and they thought, I think I just would roll over. And I just was like, nah, I'm just going to open my own place. I had no clue what I was doing. Like, that's like an understatement. I literally went that day and just started looking around. I was like, I need to be within a mile radius. I need to make sure I scratch it on a piece of paper, how much I'm bringing in, how much my overhead can be. I found a place that was 900 square feet for $600 a month, you know, and all my clients followed me. And as a 20-year-old guy for $5,000 or less, I had my own personal training studio. It's a stretch, man. Like, a lady gave me a treadmill. I had a few dumbbells. I had one mirror on the wall. But I was in that place for 3 years, man, building the business. And then I upgraded to another place. And eventually, over a decade, from 99 to 2000, really 10, I did personal training, you know, from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m., half day Saturday. I worked with 35, 40 clients on a regular basis. Eventually, I had 6 or 7 trainers working under me that were renting space. And so a lot of that wasn't really like documented online because we didn't have social media. And so, cause that didn't come around until like 2010. And so that decade, I just refined my craft, worked on my programming, studied, competed every quarter. I competed in bodybuilding or powerlifting. So I've been competing every year, multiple times a year since I was in high school. So I've been an athlete, this entire time and still to this day, compete bodybuilding, powerlifting. So I've always stayed active, always had a date on the calendar, always had a day where I had to show up, accountability, the lights are on. My whole life has been that way since that time. So that 10-year block though, really set up a foundation for the other opportunities that came shortly after.
And talk about how that even came in for you with the supplement business.
Yeah. So being a drug-free athlete, so the way I classify is I've never taken steroids or TRT or whatever the hell is cool nowadays. I don't do any of that stuff. And so I just never wanted to sit down with my kids when they saw me on these magazines, which that was my aspiration, and say, well, I did this, but I didn't want to be gray area. I didn't want to lie. I also wanted to back up my own programs with the actual results. Because the problem with the industry is there's that secret of like, oh, but this guy's also taking this. Well, that's why his results are there. Or that's not the case for me. The results that you see online, they're real. My results are real. And there's not that other asterisk that's something else, right? And so anyway, I started to get kind of well known in my area for my understanding of diet, nutrition, and some of the greats I learned from, which was Dr. Eric Serrano, Dr. Mario DiPasquale. There were guys that were like really forging ahead on amino acids and high fat dieting and insulin manipulation. And so I'm getting like college level or past college level, like information, but actually applying it and then going back to these really smart people and saying, okay, I did this, this, and this, what do I do next? And they just knew I was going to follow it. So they actually loved working with me because they were getting feedback. So then I started understanding, like, you know, I can only trade time for money for so long. So I'm an entrepreneur. I got my own thing, but I was capped out about 120 a year, which obviously is way more than I ever thought was possible probably at that time. But I was like, there's something more here for me, my growth. I want to push to another level. And so I was like, I need to make or create products that then can be sold when I'm not working, essentially, and start to build some brands. I've always had an affection towards like the hip hop culture, and just I've always followed Pac and Biggie and like entrepreneurs like Nipsey Hussle and Jay-Z. And like, so I've always like saw the way that they would build things based around like their content and just like their style. And so I've always just like, I don't know, been a fan of that type of thing. So I was like, I need to then do the same thing with the things that I'm doing. You know what I mean? And so I look at myself as like an artist and an athlete, which is maybe slightly, you know, weird, but it's how I've always viewed myself. And that's how I've always operated.
I mean, I think entrepreneurs are artists, you know, they're creators, they're visionaries. How did you get into this supplement business? Because it really blew up. It got huge.
Yeah. So this is also a great story. I was a relentless maniac on emailing every supplement company on the planet that had a pulse to try to get a sponsorship. Cause I thought that was the next big thing. I'm this athlete. I'm trying to do these magazines. I had been in a few ads. Like I'm starting to get a little traction. I was like, I need a sponsorship. I wasn't even thinking about owning a company at that time. And that was my next step. So I got a sponsorship from a company out of Denver that I'd never heard of. They ran one ad in one magazine that was given out one time at the Arnold Classic. Now I want to really talk about this point.
Yeah.
I was literally willing to email everybody and I would be up half the night doing it. So my old partner from Muscle Farm happened to own part of that company. They went out of business in 6 months after they were sending me products and I never heard from them. And I didn't even know him that well. I never even met him in person. But then all of a sudden, like 6 months later, I get a random call. Hey man, I see this box sitting here. We never sent it to you. I'm getting ready to start this other thing. Like, you interested? And I'm like, eh. He starts sending me some stuff. And I was like, yeah. At that time, this is 2006. I was actually doing online coaching in 2006 with fitness, which was really ahead of the game.
Yeah, for sure.
I was doing online coaching in 2006. I was doing consulting for an MLM company where I was speaking at conferences and I was doing personal training. So I was starting to get out of day-to-day trading time for money. I was starting to leverage my time a lot better. I was making probably the same money, but in a different way and more efficient. But I still hadn't figured out the product stuff. He sent me the first version of Assault, which is our pre-workout, in a baggie with a piece of paper that said what was on it. I then took it, trained on it. I always start with application first. Took it, trained on it, then took it to some of my resources here that are really smart. And they confirmed whoever put this together, whoever's working on this, they know what they're doing. I knew it worked better than what was in the marketplace. And then we started having the conversations on, okay, you know, I'm not working for nobody, bro. So if you want a partner, then we can start to raise some capital and try to really do this thing. And that was in April of 2008. We launched the product in September of 2008. We started sponsoring UFC fighters early 2009. By 2010, 11-ish, you know, we were one of the main sponsors when they were on Spike TV, which every college kid in America was watching. And I don't know that people even knew what we were yet, but they were starting to have brand recognition, which was allowing us to start to get some traction. I was then in charge of doing a lot of the content that was on bodybuilding.com, which was free at the time, but it was a worldwide audience. That's where we kind of we blew up initially. And the business quadrupled in size every year for 4 years, 1 million to 4 to, you know, 20, 20 to 70, 70 to 100 and some change. The problem is, if I look back, one, I was going from making $100,000 as a trainer to, you know, a multi-million dollar brand, but the growth, we hit something that was magic between the right time with the UFC, the right time with social media, the right time with content that I was offering to give value to the customer, the right endorsers, but we never could wrangle it because I don't believe, outside of myself and Brad, we had talented enough people that could manage the actual like business and forecasting. And when I'm telling you, like, I would have Vitamin Shoppe calling me like, you're advertising and we can't even get product. Like I couldn't make it fast enough. Couldn't keep track of it. Every gray haired guy, VC guy that would come in thought they could, they couldn't. There's a lot of factors of why I think it didn't end up being $1 billion. But I would tell you this, during the time that I was there from scratch to, you know, when I left in 15 and sold my percentage, I think we did like $500 million in products, 60,000 retail doors, 80 countries. It was a hell of a ride. You know, that's how I obviously got my relationship with Arnold, Tiger, Bryce Harper. I mean, the hitters of the hitters, man. It was everybody. And we were like the Nike of the space. The problem is it crumbled because of, I think, talent, maybe financial decisions, money, whatever it is. But I was this close to selling at the GNC. A lot of people don't know this. We had a meeting offsite with the CEO, said he wanted to buy us. He was going to make Muscle Farm, Arnold, and the Fitmist brand, the house brands at GNC. And he got removed as a CEO a quarter later. And it fell apart. And then in my mind, the company kind of fell apart.
Wow.
So we were this close. And it's funny because, Rob, I had a lot of phone calls with other guys that had built businesses that size or bigger. They told me, man, I was $50,000 away from losing the thing constantly. And then Amazon came and bought me. I talked to the guy from Zappos and some other places, and he confirmed everything that was happening. When you push like that, you're raising capital. It's going right out the door as fast as possible. Like, it's part of it, man. But I don't know that that was meant for me. I'll be honest with you. Like, if I don't have that experience and then I don't make, quote unquote, what I think I should have, which is a relative term, whatever, maybe more of an entitled term, I just have to start over with my own business skills and my own things that I need to work on. And I'm like, build the most authentic next version, which is Max Effort Muscle and my Core G Fitness app, and build off of what I learned and not make the same mistakes. And I then had a chance to go do and what I do. And it's been honestly unbelievable. And I'm so much happier. And my impact is so much greater. I had to go through that thing to get to this thing, but I've lived both worlds. I've lived, raised money, crazy amount of retail doors, be with all the celebrities, blah, blah, blah. And I've lived direct to customer, you know, organic, in the trenches. I'll answer the phone sometimes when people call. I don't care. Like, creating content, being about like, it's almost like what I tried to build the first time. It just ended up in something else.
Yeah.
But I've lived both worlds, and yeah, man, I just feel super blessed to have both experiences.
When you got into business, with your partner, with the supplement company, did you feel like you were a partner person, or did you notice, you know, I'm much better on my own. Like, I would rather be making the final calls over here instead of, you know, working with somebody. Did you notice that? And are you partners now, or like, what's your situation?
Oh, this is amazing. So I had to buy out. I had another partner situation in Max Effort. I learned a lot. You know, what's so funny is, like, I don't necessarily interact with either of these individuals anymore, but I learned a lot from them, man. I learned a lot about their skill sets, what they were really good at that I could implement. I learned what I don't want to, right? And sometimes, you know, you could have a bad parent, but they could teach you not what you want, like what you want to do differently, right? So I had that kind of with my pops. And so this is similar with these, like, these two guys I worked with were great, man, in some areas and not great in others, as am I. But it was like, I realized that I need to be the majority. I'm great actually with partners, I think, but I have to be the majority. And so the current businesses I own, I'm the majority owner in all of them. And so, yeah, I don't know that I'm a great partner 50-50 guy. I think that I'm a great partner if I still get the last call. So is that a great partner? I don't know. I want to see the team. I work with a lot of younger guys that I mentor. I want to see them win. They're starting to have families. They've been with me 5, 6, 7 years now. Like, I get a lot of value in that because, look, it worked for me, dude. My life's never going to be the same. I'm still working. I still want to make money. I'm still investing. I still have aspirations, but it worked. I've been my own boss since 1999. Like, it worked. I'm passionate about what I do. There's still ups and downs, but to me, I get a lot of value in teaching and seeing others around me get what they want. I had the Rolexes and the Rolls Royces, and I realized that stuff only fills you up for a short period of time. I'm trying to integrate things in my life that continue to offer value and just make me and my family happy and things I like to do. And so I've had that whole swing, man. It's been, like I said, it's been an interesting ride for the last 25.
When you decided to bring on investors, did you feel a lot of pressure around that? You know, because this is a decision nowadays that entrepreneurs need to make. Do I want to bootstrap this thing and try to, you know, fund it through cash flow and or bank loans? and be on the hook, or do I want to bring in some financial partners? And when you, once you do that, I mean, you can speak to what that's all about.
Yeah. Tons of pressure. I think that, especially because most people are bringing in people they know first, because they don't know anyone. They don't know any other way, right? That's like the warm, that's the warm leads. I think that you have to take that approach that, you know, the first time around that didn't work so good, to be honest with you. And that bothered me a lot, because that's not the way I operate. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would ultimately work out great for everybody, right? That's what you believe. Second time around, much better. So I did bring in some business partners when I bought out my old business partner, but I was the biggest investor in that. It was, my name was on top of the list this time, not someone else's. So then it was different, because I had more skin in the game on top of just being the guy who created it. And so the second time around, it's different. I learned from the first time around. I also learned that I wasn't the one making the only calls back then. And now I am. And so, you know, I needed to be in that position. I also learned that my inherent business skill and intuition, even at a younger age, I should have spoke up, or I should have been more confident in, because I'll be honest with you, Rob, like, I'm not an academic guy, obviously, right? You read my background. I would sit across from MBAs at Cornell that couldn't hold my fucking jock. And I knew it, and I fucking knew it. But I would back down because of those credentials. And I'm not sure why, right? Because I'm a pretty confident dude. But in that arena, I was so new, even though I was having a tremendous success. And so, yeah, I'm not that guy anymore. Like, I believe, and I'm not, but I'm also not going to hang myself out if I don't know it. And I'm not scared to tell people I don't know it, but I'll find it out. So I'm humble enough to know that I have a lot of weaknesses. I try to put people around me to help with those strengths. But when you take a dollar from somebody, you should intend to return it plus some. And I think it meant a lot more when I could be the main investor and then clearly say, look, this is what we're trying to do, and I'm in it with you guys. My name's at the top of the list. You can see it. So, you know, that was actually a great risk, but also exciting for me at the same regard. So I think you could speed up the process, but I think you got to know that you got to answer those calls, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's a little tricky, but I just started going real straight with people. Like, you know, some of the things were out of my control from the first time around. Some of the things I didn't understand. So there was a lot of mistakes that I'm trying to, like, you know, not repeat. But one of them is not having a partner and being the majority and being able to really take ownership, which has been nice.
Talk about learning. You know, you mentioned you're not an academic, quote unquote. You know, we always kind of present to emerging entrepreneurs, especially young ones, that are in their, you know, have a decision to make. Should I go to college or not? You know, what are your thoughts on that for somebody who has that entrepreneurial gene? You know, they've identified themselves as that. Should they go to college, do you think? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting, like, my son wants to go into finance, so he's in college as a freshman, but I see the traits too. But so I have this weird, so I think my dynamic's kind of interesting, because I have the traits with struggle and then found my passion really young. So my wife would tell me, because my wife has her master's in education, she was like, you know that you have this vortex of weird things that all kind of hit, and then you was able to, like, acknowledge it and then lock into it. And that's not for everybody, right? So I think that there's also a difference clearly between a business person and an entrepreneur, in my opinion. Like, business people that run systems and operate, that's not me. I'm a creative, and I didn't even really all the way understand all this, like, early, right?
Right.
But I see things in my head, and then I make them come true all the time, Rob. All the time.
Of course you do.
So it's like, and they become real. Like, I don't know about the law of attraction and all that, because I put the action around it, but I've seen some wild stuff come true in my life. And so I think if you have that, and you understand how to work, and you're willing to go be around people, then yeah, you could bypass the whole college thing, I think, honestly. 1 year was really good for me, because I needed to learn my craft. I didn't realize, and I just think also the resources in 1998 were way different.
So different, yeah.
So it's not like I was like, wait, that's me. Like, I listened to Gino's episode with you, and I was like, this is me 1,000,000,000%. I align with this guy on like 100 things. And it's just my makeup, which was part of why I tweeted that, because I think I listened to that. And that's,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Part of why I tweeted that, now that I think about it. And so it was like, which was just 2 days ago. And so I think that, yes, it can be bypassed, but you have to really be willing to work. And I think that that's one of the things that are missed. Like, I set my alarm Monday through Friday at 3:20 a.m. and I don't have a negotiation with myself on Thursday night, whether I'm here today. Doesn't matter. Like, I was here till 8 o'clock doing content last night because I had some business partners in that are WWE guys that are in town randomly. And then I ended up cheating on my diet and drinking bourbon last night, which I never do on a Thursday, but I made an exception, but I still got up and did this today. And I'm excited to be here. And so it's like, you know, I just think that I have non-negotiables and I've had them for so long that I don't even really think about it. I just operate. And then when people come to me and say, well, gee, why are you still getting up? Why are you still doing this? If I know the result and what it equals, I know this time in, these actions, these habits equal X. Why would I fucking change them? Because if I still have aspirations to be this guy and still grow these things and do these things, and this is what got me here, why would I change it now? Because I got more dollars in my pocket or two more people know who I am. Like, if I want to continue this process, this is what it takes. Yes, maybe I think, well, if GNC would have bought me and I made $100 million and I blah, 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 blah. This is my path, man. It wasn't my path. That's like, right. I'm supposed to be this guy. I'm supposed to be the guy that's writing, I bought an island and wrote a book, or, you know, like little book. It can say, like, I'm the guy that I think is an entry point for a lot of these people that don't care or think they want to read, or maybe you're a little weird about self-education, or they're blue collar guys that can say, well, if I could apply this to my side thing. And I just think I'm a bridge, I think, man, because of the way that I am and operate, for a lot of people that can expect a lot more and have a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I bring people in with exercise, and I teach them a whole another way of life. They just don't realize it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and not going to college doesn't mean you stop learning, you know, I mean,
I invest constantly into
learning.
My library is absurd. And plus, right? You know, and I've also, like, I mean, I've read Rich Dad Poor Dad probably 7 or 8 times. I've read Napoleon Hill, like every book from Napoleon. Like, you can see, like, I don't even turn the TV on. I go to read first. I'm constantly buying books. My Apple book list is wild. I have an actual, like, library at my house. If you would have told me that when I was a kid, I would have been like, because I was being forced to learn things. See, that's the other entrepreneurial trait. Like, I want to do what I want to do. And then when I'm in it, you can't stop me on the learning. And then that's what allowed me to write these smaller books. I think have impacted a lot of my community. I've written 4 books, but I can't really write that well. I record everything and get it edited and then make sure it's in my voice. So I have a whole system to even get around that, because, like, if you read emails from me, they're awful. Like, it's just not the way I operate. And I know that about myself. So it's like a running joke in my family that they can't believe I actually wrote books.
A cool thing that I've noticed throughout our conversation today is you really do know yourself. You know, we talk about that as a thing. You must know thyself. The other thing that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, that, you know, we consider a must do, is we call it see it every night. And you said, you know, I can't tell you how many things that I could see that happened. Can you talk about that? Like, you know, how that's worked for you? Like, do you have a process around it, or does it just start happening and you just see it, you see it, and then all of a sudden you start doing and doing, and then it's a thing?
I have this ability to, and I call it daydreaming, visualization, what it is. I can see how I want to operate or how I want things to move. And it's like, it started off with this seeing myself, like, becoming this person that is like some type of a, and I don't even know, like I couldn't put a lot of context to it because I didn't have a lot of reference points other than Arnold. But I was like, I saw myself as this professional, like fitness type of thing, like just owning my own gym. I think I could grasp, like I could own my own gym. Like, cause this guy that owned this gym, but he still had another job, but I knew I wanted to be different than that. Like, and I could get to like square one, you know what I mean? And then honestly, I'm telling you, I was lit up since that one lady gave me money to do it. And then I thought, well, I need 10 of these people. I just automatically was like, okay, now I can see myself having 20 clients. I charge them this. And then when I had those few little wins, man, I just started to believe that really anything was out there. And so as I got older and I started having some, I could visualize myself going into GNC and picking up the product. The one visualization that was eerily unbelievable was the Columbus Barnes and Nobles, the same one that I had Arnold sign my book at. I would visualize myself walking through the door and walking to the newsstand and seeing myself, Corey Gregory, clearly on the cover of a magazine, picking it off the newsstand and then handing it to my grandfather.
Wow.
Because he's the one, like, it gives me chills thinking about it.
I got chills.
Please. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So when that, let me collect myself. When that happened, it had already happened in my mind so many times. It didn't even feel unnormal.
Right.
And so once I do that, thinking that magazine, like that would be given to Arnold, like I couldn't even get there. Like that shit was like crazy town. But yeah, but when I knew I had the opportunity for Arnold, like to pitch him, I was ultimately confident because I'm like, I'm not walking in here and not coming out with this dude not being my business partner. Like, are you kidding me? Like all of, like, I just knew it. I was like, whatever, I'm going to be myself. Authenticity. Like, I know this, like the back of my hand, like there's no way I'm coming out of this thing. And you know, my business partners at that time were killers too. Like it was locked in. Like I still have the pitch deck at my house. It looks exactly like what happened. The stuff we showed him that day is exactly what happened. And so, and then I saw myself on these videos and teaching these people. And I don't know, even like the building we're in right now, this is a great example. I've lived in this town for 10 years. And my son was a freshman or sophomore in high school. He never really took part a lot in my gym because it was kind of far away and just like logistics with the other kids. And we did a lot of training stuff at my house. But I knew he needed to be in this environment. Our environment's different. It's invite only. It's hardcore. You have to put your best foot forward or you get your butt kicked. It's just what it is, right? That's the expectation of old school gym. And that's why it's invite only, because it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
But I knew my son needed to be here. So I started that process of looking, and I thought to myself, if I could just rotate down there to the gym, I could mesh the warehouses, I could find this. I could see myself operating literally in a 5-mile radius. Family can be intertwined more. And then I just started looking, but I wasn't even like with direct intention, but also like just kind of the process. And it was a guy told me of another guy. I think I know the building you're looking for.
No,
I walked in and knew it immediately. I could see everything. I could see the gym. I could see where Max Effort, I could see the studio. And this was about almost 3 years ago. That was life-changing for my son. And I believe that's why it happened. I think because my intention was not just business. Oh, I want to own real estate in the area. Like, no. I needed the gym, which represents a culture that my family needed more represented, and then everyone else's family, and then my business partner I own with the gym. So that is one business partnership that has never had problems. I own 50% of the gym with my best friend from high school, and we've never had issues.
That's so cool.
It's been since 2003.
Oh,
so
it's 20 God. Years.
So I need to backtrack on what I said earlier.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
But that also, even the way we have that set up, we own the gym together, but our personal training businesses are separate. So we never really, you know, we can always agree on like, where's the barbells go? You know, that's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but anyway, it's like, I think the reason why that opportunity showed itself is because the intention was in the proper area and the vision was so clear. And then I knew that the timing, I had to move on it immediately at all costs. And that's exactly what I did. And so I think that that's, I have this, I don't know. I talk about it all the time. I see a lot of things in my head. And then if I keep seeing them and then I start to put action around them, why wouldn't I believe they could come true? I'm telling you, when I picked up that magazine that day, it was like really like in some magical, weird area that you can't. And I think that this world operates by a different set of laws that people, you know, just ignore.
Yeah.
I just have not ignored them. And because I'm a dreamer, I'm a creative, I don't think I've let society really push that down on me. Like I didn't get pushed into a corner and just believe it's not true. I never really lost that. I never really lost the competitive environment. I never really lost the team because I have those things. I never really lost game day. I never lost the dream and the possibilities. I think I kept a lot of things that most people lose past probably grade school or maybe middle school, honestly.
You know, Corey, before we started, we were talking a little bit about the purpose of this podcast. And I remember you saying, you know, I think I have a few things maybe I could share that could be useful. That was an understatement. I just want to let you know. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I am so grateful. This was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And anyone who hears this, if they aren't inspired, I don't think they're on the entrepreneurial journey. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, lastly, I'd like to tell you about the newest one.
Please do.
So once again, I've been in this location for 2-3 years and I just started looking broadly. You know what? There's a lake 20 minutes from here. I never owned a boat. I've never spent any time on it, nothing. But I see on Zillow that there's an island for sale that's completely untouched. No utilities, nothing. I don't even know anybody that can take me to it. Well, I did know one person. The next day, I see it on Zillow. The lady had dropped a price and I'm like, called. I'm like, is this real? Like, I call my realtor and she's like, yeah, it's real. I'm like, all right, I got to go see this. Now, I have zero, like, when I see this, I have zero interest, like, in doing all this. But the next day, I'm in the office with a former NFL player named Brian Peters, who would be a really good interview for you, too. He's amazing. And he says, I tell him, I'm like, man, I saw this island on Zillow, bro. Like, this could be interesting. Like, I'm just looking for a new project. He's like, well, dude, my grandparents have a boat at that lake. I could take you there. I go, today? He goes, yeah. Hour later, no shit. We're driving around this island.
You're on the island.
I'm looking at it. I'm going, all right. It's a 1-acre island on this lake close by. And it's just trees, like 80-year-old trees, overgrown mess. Like, I'm looking at it. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Okay. I could get there. The next day, I call my insurance agent because I know she has a house there. I was like, hey, I want to stand on it. Can you take me there? She said, yeah. So this is where it comes. So I swim over, I stand on it. The same feeling happens to me that happens when I walk in this building that we're in right now. I can see it all. I'm like, oh my gosh, this might be where I like live. Like ultimately, this is a unique, obvious real estate opportunity. This is a challenge for me personally because I've never developed that land before. I've never driven a boat. I don't know how to park one. I don't know the stretch of it in every angle is like uncomfortable. And that in 100 years, no one has been able to get utilities, build on it. So I know there's some issues and I got to do some research. I do some research. I see it 2 weeks prior to closing it. I buy it on July 27th. Since July 27th, it took me a month to clear paths on it with college kids. I had to buy a boat. I had to go to the marina and say, I walk in the marina. And this is part of not know, like being vulnerable. I said, look, guys, I'm buying this property. It's 5-minute boat ride from here. I've never driven a boat. I don't know how to operate it. I need one. I need a home. I need to know how to get there. And they're just laughing. And they're like, dude, we'll help you. You know what I mean? And so I'm running into the dock. I was more uncomfortable driving the boat than I was buying the property. I mean, it was like ridiculous. But in that amount of time, I've started Muscle Island LLC. I message a guy that's going to build me an unbelievable container house and gym on the island that has a big following that we're going to do content with. I've written a book. 2 weeks into it, I recorded a book, which is I bought an island and wrote a book, which is
so great.
Hilarious title. But it's really about the I know I'm going over a little bit here, but I feel like this will be super valuable. So give me 1 second. It's really about these things, though. And these are the main takeaways of why I wrote this book. The first takeaway is nothing's going to be perfect. So you just got to start, which every entrepreneur needs to hear that loud and clear.
Yeah.
Authenticity is the cheat code.
Love that.
Don't go to your deathbed with regret, which I'm scared
of. Yes.
The sauce is in the change around you, because that's so impactful. You don't even realize. Don't quit living and refine the consistent process. That's like my main takeaways of the book.
The consistent process. I hear you in that.
It's everything, bro. And so anyway, the island has been an amazing growth process and obviously going to end up being a great business thing. But I have learned so much and I could see it, and I just went at all cost until somebody would tell me no. And no one has told me no. I forced it, but in this vertical of just believing. And so clearly you'll be able to see what'll happen over the next 12
months. I cannot wait. Follow me. Can they follow you on social media to see the progress?
Yeah. Okay. At Muscle Island Book is the
IG. Muscle Island Book. Okay. We'll put that in the show notes too.
Please put that in the show notes. And it's been
with your other books and everything you're up to.
Yeah. I appreciate it. So just keep believing, everybody. It's 20 years. It's a culmination of everything. This island didn't happen because of last week or today. It's because of 25 years of, you know, busting my tail and believing in myself. But I feel like this is one of the legacy pieces that I'm going to be real proud of when it's done.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad you did that and went over. I was fine with that. So we'll wrap it up. Thanks again, Corey. I really appreciate you. And to all the amazing entrepreneurs who are listening today, I greatly appreciate you spending time with Corey and myself. And as always, I wish you much love and gratitude.
Thank you.